Welcome to Adjuster Talk with Jason Heenan, co-owner of Royal Adjusting Services. 13 years as an adjuster, Jason brings industry leaders on the show to give you all the information you need to make your business and career the best it can be. Push the pace of your adjusting career with Adjuster Talk. And now here's your host, Jason Heenan.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Jason Heenan with Adjuster Talk, and today I have a couple of guys that are thinking about becoming adjusters, and I invited them to do the show because I think they're as qualified as anyone out there. I'm going to be interviewing them at the same time. One, his name is Matt, and one is James, and they both work for a builder. And Matt is a warranty representative that comes in afterwards, after the house is built and is sold, and the people have moved in. And as their warranty expires, as I understand it, he goes around the house and looks at it with the homeowner and does the warranty claims for the things that went wrong with the house in the first year or two. And then James joins us. He is a builder. He has 2.5 years experience building houses and 10 years as a warranty rep. So it looks like the natural progression is they go from the warranty side over to being superintendents for this particular builder. And they reached out to me and had some questions, of course, about how to smoothly transition. I'm recording this first bit just so you guys understand the normal questions that they're gonna ask and that I'm going to go over with them. And that is, the biggest question on everyone's mind is always, how do you transition? You know, how much money do I need to transition? Or what length of time or how many months of bills do I need to pay? And so this is my advice to you guys. There's a few steps. The first step, of course, is getting your license. And in this case, we're in Texas, and Texas reciprocates through several states in the United States. You still have to have the license in that state, but it's as simple as filling out an application and then giving them the whatever state it is, your Texas license number. And they respect our continuing education requirements as well as our licensing requirements. So it's really easy to get in. It's 30 plus states. So the first thing you need to do is get a Texas resident or non-resident adjuster's license. Whenever I got my license, it was back in 2004, you still had to go to a 40-hour classroom in class experience where you had an instructor, and then at the end of the class they gave you a test of competency, is what I believe they called it, and it was a couple hundred questions, and then you had to pass it. And then after you received your certificate of completion, you would submit that with your fingerprints and a license to the Texas Department of Insurance, and they issue a license. So now there's better, you know, it's 2017, so you can do webinars. I think the most popular choice is there's a lot of study material, and we actually offer that at Royal. Chris Smith is our director of claims. A couple years ago, he saw some flaws in the way people were licensed and the test. And so he sat down and made a study guide. It's pretty interesting. You can reach out to Chris or Mindy. Chris's email address is cmesmith. That's Charlie Matthew Edward Smith at royaladjustingservices.com. The subject of your email should be something like study guide, something like that. He has that. I don't know what he's charging, but you can buy a study guide. And then there's places to go test. There's facilities to go test and take that same test of competency. I didn't do it that way, so I can't specifically describe what that's like, but there's testing facilities the state's laid out, you know, probably public libraries and things like that. So there are three ways to get your license in Texas. The next thing you need to do, in my opinion, I can tell you this, to go to work for us, is you're going to need to know how to run some estimating software. And again, at this point in your life, you have not quit your current job. What you've done is you have taking your licensing course or study material while you still have your regular job. You do this in the evening time, study up or take your webinars in the evening time or however it works out. And then you've tested and you have not quit your job yet. The next thing you need to do is download a sample version of Xactimate, or trial version, I believe they call it. You have to get with Xactimate on all the details, but that's spelled X A CTIMATE. That is the piece of software, to my knowledge, most of the big companies are using. All of our companies that we work for require Xactimate. There's like SimSol and MSB, and there's a few other small ones out there, but Xactimate is the gorilla in the room for an estimating platform. I would suggest, and this is what I did, was I switched over from MSB to Xactimate in like 2011. And before I started working Xactimate claims, I wanted to take an Xactimate course just to get a foundation, basic understanding of how to run their sketch software, which a lot of people don't even use that anymore for roofs. They just order a satellite view of that and use that. And whatever company you choose to do that, they usually send you a file that just imports right into your own software. What I'm getting at there is I would take an estimating course on Xactimate just so you have an idea of what you're getting into. You can be familiar with it. And this is the most important step here. This is step three. For me, this is the most important. And that is I would try to get a ride-along with somebody. And what I mean by ride-along is there's tens of thousands of adjusters out there working right now. They're closing claims on a daily basis. I would network and try to find one of those field guys that are close to you and see if you can get a ride-along. I can give you several success stories just within our company of guys that transitioned over from jobs that weren't nearly as applicable as what Matt and James have under their belt. We have guys that sold insurance that let their agent's license lapse and they got the property license, and they wouldn't know anything about hail or wind or pipe burst, fire, or even where to start when adjusting a claim. They would just know how to talk to people. And most jobs, you are going to have experience dealing with people. So what we do is we try to get people to ride along with our adjusters, see if they like it. They would have been already vetted by me or Hagen, even Chris, to make sure that they're going to be fit in and be the fabric of what we like to make the company stronger. But I would say that's the most important, is to find an adjuster who's currently doing the job so you can ride along with him a couple days and get a feel. Because at this point, you're financially committed through getting the license and through the Xactimate training. You're going to want to take a look at the job and be confident that when you get your first assignment, you're able to knock on that front door and then introduce yourself to the homeowner and come off confident and competent so they're not like, hey, I think this is a new guy. James and Matt are going to ask the question for sure, and I'm going to go ahead and answer it right now. They're going to want to know what the first claim is going to be like. And here's the example I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you a hail claim on a pretty easy house with some pretty easy hail, nothing too complex. But your standard hail claim, let's call it golf ball size. The first thing I do when I pull up to the house is you're always going to want to take a picture of the front of the house. And I mean, when I say front of the house, not just the front door, the house, the address showing that it's, 4300, whatever the street name is. You're going to want to take an entire, almost like a Google map front picture. So that way, the people in the office, when you label that picture as front of risk, are going to understand you scoped the right house. And every adjuster has a story where him or someone he knows scoped the wrong house because their software had them one block over. And they do the entire thing and they do it for free, and then someone comes out and kicks them off their roof. So always take a picture of the front of the house. Walk up, knock on the door, introduce yourself to the homeowner and let them know, hey, these are the things I'm going to be doing. Homeowner, I'm here to inspect your property, taking a look at the exterior of the house. Before I get started though, do you have anything going on in the interior of the home? And it's always good to try to get inside the house and snap a few pictures so you can see the overall condition of the home. You'd want to know if a person had, 10 vicious dogs in there that they had crated up. You would want to take a picture of that if you could, just to let the underwriters of the policy know that, hey, we have a potential liability. They have 10 vicious dogs. or you get in there and the people haven't gotten rid of anything in 10 years, and it's packed wall to wall with boxes and just stuff, and it's a potential fire hazard. So let's try to get in the house and just take a few overview photos, ask the homeowner, hey, do you have any concerns in here? Have you seen water spots? And I generally brush through room to room just to take pictures of ceilings. So that way, when you get that lawsuit paperwork in the mail a year later, and they say, well, you didn't even look at the inside, I could say, well, I have, you know, 14 photos of no damage inside their house. So get in there, take a few overview photos, let the homeowner know that that's what you're doing. You're just making sure that the house looks good from the inside, so you know what to look for whenever you're outside. And sometimes you find a water spot occasionally on a ceiling that don't show up, or that doesn't show up rather to the naked eye. So go take your photos, and then you'll go out, and unless there's something blocking, I try to walk as you're looking at the house to the left of the home first. And I'm looking at windows, window screens, downspouts, the fence. I'm looking at even the shrubs, even though shrubs they aren't covered by hail. If it is what I would call good, and I'm using the rabbit ears here or the princesses, if it's good hail, it will have shredded the bushes or shredded flowers or tree leaves or anything like that, depending on, of course, which direction it came out of. But I'm checking for all these things, and I'm walking from corner to corner. I'm taking pictures the entire time. I'm looking close at that fence to see where if there's spatter on the fence, because the hail will remove oxidation from the wood board fences. And then I'm looking at the air conditioner to make sure we haven't flattened any fins or done any damage to the cover on it. When I get in the backyard, we're making sure there's no dog in the backyard, so we're not getting bit and having a bad day there. We're going to go look at the barbecue grill and all the patio furniture. We're going to see, of course, the ground out there. A lot of times people have a nice stained wood deck, and if the hail is of any size at all, it will have removed some of the stain. And we're going to take pictures of all this, because we're going to owe them, or not us, we're not going to owe them any money. We're going to submit an estimate to the insurance company, who's going to look at the estimate to see if there's coverage for these things. They may have had a claim last year. You're looking at one-year-old hail. You don't know. You can't date stamp that stuff. So you're going to submit your findings, and they're going to review it for coverage, and then they'll make the financial determination. But that's what we're going to write in our estimate, those things that we see. You know, if there's some dents in the grill, dents in the storage building, a lot of birdhouses. You know what? Those little things are big to some people. Solar lights, flower pots, as inexpensive as they are, they matter. And when you have like a $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 deductible, you're going to want every little bit of your estimate, just not only for your own fee bill, but to make sure that homeowner understands that you're out there to help them and do your job and not pay one penny extra or one penny under, which is very important. We want to be competent on every claim. So now that we've done the entire inspection, we've started at one corner of the house, worked our way and gotten back, and we have our scope notes. Generally, we know, based on what we found on the ground, what we should be finding on the roof. And the roof's a big deal, because roofs are very expensive. And if the hail's not big enough to dent gutters or dent window screens, it's generally not going to be enough to damage asphalt shingles or fiberglass shingles, right? How could a hailstone decide, well, I'm going to do this but not that? So that's what that's why we do the ground first. Also, if we found a water spot in the bedroom or a bathroom or hall or whatever, we have an idea of where in the house that's at. And so we're going to be looking on the roof. Maybe there's a pipe jack that got damaged by the hail, or it's old and brittle, and maybe it's rotted out. And so we have to let the homeowner know that, hey, you have 7 pipe jacks up here that are dry rotted. So then, of course, you're going to get up on your roof. You're going to take all your photos. You're going to make your test squares. And this is why it's important to do your ride-alongs. You know, a test square is 10 feet by 10 feet. You're not going to want to mark off blisters and circle, you know, where the satellite guy moved the satellite dish over 2 or 3 times and set his tools down. You know, that's not going to look like hail, so you certainly can't mark those things. There's all sorts of things that you're going to run into on a hail claim, where a contractor got a quarter out of his pocket and there's horizontal scrub lines in the middle of your field, and you're going, well, that doesn't really look like hail, and every hit looks the same. And it's just all in the middle of the, you know, field. So anyway, you're going to need to get up there, and you're going to need to take a look at all 4 slopes. Make sure the hail is consistent with what you saw on the ground. It usually comes from the west, out of the northwest. Yeah, if you find some east hail, you're probably in a pretty tornadic storm. Moving on, you would come down your ladder, go over your scope with the homeowner, let them know you're going to be putting together an estimate, and they may corner you up about your findings. You'd say, I found this, I found that, and then as far as coverage goes, I don't determine that. I don't have the checkbook. The insurance company has that, but I'm going to submit everything in my report, and you should hear from them in X to X days. And normally the insurance company will tell you, 7 to 10 or, 1 to 2 weeks or whatever they tell you to tell them. And so then you're going to take all that information and you're going to put it into Xactimate. That is the most critical part for me, is getting those photos right away into Xactimate, getting them labeled. That way it's fresh on my mind. I run my diary right there as well. The big diary, the one there that covers your inspection. I run that one right there. So that way when it's fresh on my mind, I'm not trying to, you might have saw a water spot in a closet and there were 10 other rooms with water spots. And you're like, okay. And if you don't do those things right then, and let's say you stack them for a few days, you're going to forget about that closet. And guess what? That claim's going to reopen over 2 feet by 2 feet of painting. Because the homeowner's going to be like, hey, I think you missed this closet in the master bedroom, blah, blah, blah. And so that's just going to generate more phone calls and that kind of stuff for you. And that's something you don't have time to do, is be inefficient out in the field, because time is money out there. So going back to the system, those are your big three things. That's your way in. Get licensed, learn how to run your software, get some ride-alongs if you can. And then at that point, like Chris Cleveland talked about in our last podcast, you need to get out there and you need to get networking. You need to get on Facebook. You need to get on Adjuster Central. You need to get in LinkedIn and start making friends with these managers. Start going to groups. Let them know who you are. And the more FaceTime you have, the more likely a claims manager is going to try to request you or believe in you. So I would start there. Now, another question I always get is, how do I get paid? How long is it going to take for me to get paid? And I can't speak for the other companies, but I can tell you this. Most everyone has what they call a fee schedule. And that fee schedule is going to have tiers in it. And the value of the claim is what decides which tier of billing your claim is going to fall in. So if your claim is $0 because it's a denial or there's no coverage or old damage or who knows what the circumstances are, but let's say there's no damage and you've taken all your photos, that kind of stuff, and then you've wrapped your claim up and you're ready to invoice it. And the invoice on that case would be the lowest tier. Now, when you figure out how many claims you're going to need to make a storm work or a storm event or pay all your bills, you need to be figuring this. Figure how many claims you're going to get, let's say 30, at your lowest tier, and that be your number. Don't figure that every claim is going to be a home run, because they're not. I would say you run into denials, and this is just a number I'm pulling on my rear end here, between 20 and 40% of my regular business claims have some sort of coverage issue in them. Most of the time it's related to deterioration, where people just don't maintain their homes. But anyway, let's figure our budget out based on close without payments or CWPs, and that's how we're going to make our budget. But you are going to have a fee schedule, and at the end of every claim you get paid per claim based on the value of the claim. The other way to get paid is day rate, and day rate is usually cleaning up an event, meaning like lots of, let's say for every two claims, one is going to reopen. And of course I made that statistic up as well, but it's a lot, especially in rainy areas where additional damage occurs, or a tarp blows off and lets more water in or something like that. Claims reopen, and it may only change the value of that claim $100 or $200 or something. And so you can't go in and make money cleaning up someone else's claim. So they pay you by the day instead of by the claim. And there's usually a set standard of production, you know, where they're trying to get 10 or 12 hours out of you. And that's typically in the, you know, $400 to $500 range per day is what they pay. You know, so you can see you can go and make $12,000 or $15,000 pretty easy. And I wouldn't say coasting. A 12-hour day is not coasting, but you know, not having to schedule aggressively. But whenever it's go time and you have a pending full of claims, it's going to be on a fee schedule, and you're going to be going out there, and you're going to be working hard, and you're going to be working lots of hours, and you're going to be building that fee schedule. So that's how you get paid. We, as a company, get paid from our biggest carrier every 2 weeks. So we pay every 2 weeks. We pay between the 5th and 10th, and the 20th and 25th is whenever we usually run our payroll. And since they're our big carrier, all the other carriers we work for, we run that. They're, you know, they pay us individually, check by check. So we just run theirs in with that. I wouldn't quit my job until I got the phone call and it was told, hey, I have, you know, claims for you, and you were confident you can go settle these claims with limited support. And usually, and this is how it'll be from here on out, when you get that phone call, you got to go. And it's not pretty. I'm not telling anyone to quit their job. I'll just tell my story real quick. I was working, and I was lucky. I was working for Nationwide in 2005 as a casualty rep. Got a phone call from Pilot that they needed me. And this was three or four times I'd gotten that same phone call, and I told them no before. One, because I'm an idiot. I was 22 or 23 years old. I had literally had a single cab truck and an apartment, and I told them no in 2004. I missed Charlie, Ivan, Francis, and Gene because I was scared of leaving a $32,000 a year job that I hated, absolutely hated, working 50 hours a week, and it was a 45-minute drive each way. Finally, in 2005, I got tired of sitting behind the desk. Love the people I work with. Nationwide's an outstanding company. At the time, it was called Allied, a member of Nationwide. Had a great boss, Lisa Walters, and then sat next to Tom Kelly and Marge Kelly, and worked for Carol Alvarez. She was the director. And I loved the people. The people were intelligent. They kept the day moving. Nationwide had a great schedule. But I hated working in the cube. It felt like a jail cell to me, and I knew that wasn't for me. So I started asking questions to the property guys, and the property guys were really willing to help. And before you know it, I got the phone call. Hey, we need you here. And I told them no. That was for Katrina. And then I called my friend Phil Mason. And Phil, I've known since I was in second grade. And he's the guy who walked me through getting my license and taught me how to scope, and also helped me through my first claims down in Beaumont, Texas for Hurricane Rita. But as the story goes, I called him and I said, Phil, I need your help. You know, what do I do here? And Phil's like, well, do you want to go? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, there's more claims here than we can handle. So I turned in my resignation. And this is why I'm telling you it's a mistake, or it would have been a mistake for me. Everyone has their own thing. But it was a mistake for me because had there not been a Hurricane Rita, I would have quit my job for nothing. When I called back in 2 weeks when the 2 weeks expired, and I said, hey, I'm ready to go, this is Jason, they said, who? And I panicked. Luckily for me, and unfortunately for everyone in Beaumont, there was a Category 5 in the center of the Gulf of Mexico that looked like one of those skill saw blades, and it marched right in the coach. And I called Phil again, and I said, Phil, I need work. I just quit my job, and they don't have work for me. And Phil said, Jason, come on. And he got me with dispatch. Dispatch told me I need to be in Dallas the next day. So I got in my single cab truck, loaded a suitcase, didn't have a tape measure or a ladder, and I drove to DFW from Phoenix, Arizona. They dispatched me down to Beaumont. Pilot had two or three help rooms. The one Phil Mason was running was in Baytown. I found just a terrible hotel to stay in. I was lucky to have it. At the time, the National Guard wasn't letting people in into Beaumont yet. And I met a guy named Brian Britton, who's a realtor now out in Lubbock. And we took care of each other, man. And that's how it was. It was a family. These guys you met in orientation, you know, we all took care of each other. And that's where it started. It was in 2005. That's where the life of the independent. And I went from making $40,000 a year at Nationwide. I made $100,000 from September to December 31st, and then I moved to day rate, and I made like $96,000 the next year. It went up from there. Now, I did have expenses associated with running claims. I don't want you to think that someone just sent me $96,000 and I just had that in the bank. As foolish as I was as a young man, I probably finished the year with $20,000 in debt. There's no telling. But that's my story. That's how it went. I am going to cut that off right there. I'm going to call this our first installment of this interview with Matt and James. And then on the second installment, we're going to cut right into their questions and cover our standard new guy questions, like, hey, and I guarantee they're going to be like, hey, I have anxiety. Please don't use my name, blah, blah, blah. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you shortly.
Thank you for listening to Adjuster Talk with Jason Heenan. If you like this show, the best way to support it is to leave a great review on iTunes. Link up with us on Facebook at Adjuster Talk, and feel free to send your questions and comments to Jason on Twitter or Instagram at Jason_Heenan. That's Jason, J-A-S-O-N, _Heenan, H-E-E-N-A-N. Or send a personal message on Facebook at Adjuster Talk. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week.